Okay, think back for a moment. What were you doing 35 years ago this month? The year was 1979. Hi, I'm Chuck Swindoll, urging you to stick around for the entire program today. After my message, we'll spend a nostalgic moment together, okay? But right now, it's time to hear Insight for Living.
Today on Insight for Living, Chuck Swindoll describes the qualities of a good boss.
When there's confusion at the top, there is greater confusion down the line. Or as a friend of mine says, a mist in the pulpit puts a fog in the pew. I think that's a good word. Churches that have pastors who are uncertain of where they are going become churches that don't know where they are going. It's a tragedy to behold.
Whether or not you're currently spending your days in the workplace as an employee, you certainly know what it's like to fall under the authority of leadership. Sometimes leaders inspire. Sometimes leaders berate. So how do we respond? And what's the prototype for a truly effective boss? Well, today on Insight for Living, you'll hear Chuck Swindoll present one of the most highly requested sermons of the year. We're looking at Ecclesiastes 8, where the writer, Solomon, pauses to give us an illustration on leadership. We'll begin by reading the passage together before Chuck presents his message on the qualities of a good boss.
Believe it or not, Solomon's journal includes a brief section on being a good boss. Yep, you heard me correctly. On being a good boss. I'm referring to the first 9 verses of Ecclesiastes chapter 8. In our previous message, you may remember, we discovered once again that wisdom is not academic. It's designed to go to work in our lives. It's practical, not theoretical. Solomon is careful to give the reader down-to-earth, easily grasped principles. Now, we often call them proverbs to live by. But his concern is that we not leave those truths all alone unproductive. They're to be lived out. And so as we deal with these things about wisdom, we also need to have a for instance. So God prompts Solomon to provide us with that in his next journal entry. That's why I suggest that the section paints for us the portrait of a good and wise individual who is in a position of authority over us. We're calling him a boss, for lack of a better word. His words apply to all who were managers, CEOs, that's chief executive officers, in case you didn't know, to all who were entrepreneurs, industrial foremen, medical supervisors, in fact, supervisors of any and every kind. It refers to anyone who is in authority over the lives of other people. You've got it now. And so to prepare us for all of this, I want to read Solomon's entry into his journal from the New Living Translation Study Bible, Ecclesiastes 8. I'll begin with verse 1 down through verse 9. How wonderful to be wise, to analyze and interpret things. Wisdom lights up a person's face, softening its harshness. Obey the king, since you vowed to God that you would. Don't try to avoid doing your duty, and don't stand with those who plot evil, for the king can do whatever he wants. His command is backed by great power. No one can resist or question it. Those who obey him will not be punished. Those who are wise will find a time and a way to do what is right, for there is a time and a way for everything, even when a person is in trouble. Indeed, how could people avoid what they don't know is going to happen? None of us can hold back our spirit from departing. None of us has the power to prevent the day of our death. There's no escaping that obligation, that dark battle. And in the face of death, wickedness will certainly not rescue the wicked. I've thought deeply about all that goes on here under the sun, where people have the power to hurt each other.
listening to Insight for Living. For helpful resources related to our topic, go to insightworld.org. And now here's Chuck Swindoll to describe the qualities of a good boss.
Being a good boss is neither easy nor accidental. People who are a joy to follow are rare. Chances are good that many of you who hear these words right now do not look forward to facing your boss tomorrow, because a very good superior is rare. It is unusual to find folk who look forward to being with the skipper of the ship, who truly find the leadership of the one in charge of their business, their office, or the shop, a motivation to be around. It's been my observation in a few years of employment that bosses move in one of two extremes. The first is what I might call an incompetent superior, sort of a personification of the Peter principle. They are not qualified to do what they're doing, but they have the amazing ability to make it look like it's your fault. People who are incompetent are poor models. They are tough to work for. They are frequently negative and discouraging rather than affirming and encouraging. They are often terribly insecure, but they cover up for it, which is again a part of the incompetent role that they fill. There is another extreme, and it's what I would call the intolerant superior. This person is qualified to hold a job, but if the truth were known, down deep inside, the individual is a workaholic, perfectionistic, demanding. That person's entire life revolves around the job, and the individual expects yours to also. You never seem to satisfy a person in this position. Hard-charging, high-achieving, tough-minded, often overly qualified, and no one can quite do the job as well as they. It's possible for that to be true of a teacher or of a professor. I smiled when I read a little cartoon some time ago of a little fourth grade boy standing nose to nose with a teacher at the chalkboard. There were several unsolved mathematical problems still on the board. He was looking back at her as she has probably just said to him something about not doing his job and being an underachiever. And he says, "I'm not an underachiever, you're an overexpector." Overexpectors run in all different categories. Some of them are fathers and some of them are husbands. Sometimes overexpectors are coaches. Sometimes they're teachers. Frequently they are preachers. Many a congregation today is not being led, it's being beaten. It's not being encouraged to model the life of Christ, it's being chided and whipped and put down and battered by a well-meaning but intolerant shepherd who simply cannot live with anything less than the ultimate, an overexpector. Now let me pause here and say something, lest you think that this kind of message really applies to a very few people. There isn't a person hearing my words right now who is unaffected by someone in authority. No one. Either in your home, or at the place where you go to school, or where you work, or in that sphere of responsibility that you hold, either you are in authority or you are under the authority of someone. And if the truth could be known, some of you are moving rapidly toward being in greater authority over many. I wish I could have your attention the most, because you are on the verge of making a magnificent or a miserable impact on others' lives. You're not there yet, but you are in that formative, moldable stage where you can really make it for good rather than for ill. So what we find in this book of Ecclesiastes, chapter 8, would be some excellent guidelines to remember. Now, while you're turning to this chapter of Ecclesiastes, I want to tell you how I've arrived at this idea of a good boss from this passage. Sometimes passages are really hard to put together. This one happened to have flowed rather easily for me. Once I got the thrust of the structure. So I thought, since that was true, I shouldn't hold you at bay and have you wonder if some inspiration drifted in through the window and told me what this was all about. I have never had such inspiration. Ecclesiastes is a journal. It's the memoirs of a man named Solomon. For the first six chapters, the first half of the book, for there seems to be a hinge between chapter 6 and chapter 7, for the first half of the book, he's struggling. He's on his face. He's got his fist tightened. He's cursing God. He's cursing life. He's evaluating, he's adding, he's subtracting, and all of his answers give him pain and misery, so that it's all empty and futile. And he at times screams against God and records it in his journal. Through the first six chapters of Ecclesiastes, everything is seen under the sun, on this earth, horizontal. He's miserable. In his miserable musings, he finally comes to an end of himself, it seems, or near the end, when he gets to the second half of the book, he begins to think more about wisdom, which we learned last time is nothing more than viewing life with objectivity and handling life with stability. That seems to be a good workable definition of wisdom. Looking at it objectively, handling it with stability. And for more than 30 times in the last six chapters of the book, he refers to wise or wisdom or wisely. That's the same root word. So he now seems to be taking a turn toward living his life more wisely. And so he throws at us several random proverbs to begin the seventh chapter. You'll see how it's printed in your Bible in a poetic form. One proverb after another, and it's great truth, but the problem is it's theoretical. It's not been fleshed out, we would say today. And then he wraps up the proverbs with the last half of chapter 7, where he lists several of the outworkings of wisdom, where he puts wisdom to work. And we've learned from our last study that wisdom includes balance and strength and insight in this business of handling life with stability and looking at it with objectivity. But it's still not fleshed out. You know, the thing I love about the Bible is that when great truth is given, God frequently brings in the shading of lives so we can identify with that truth. He just doesn't teach us about the abstract importance of faith. He tells us about Abraham and Sarah, who staggered not at the promise of God through unbelief. He doesn't just talk about standing alone and being people of character and resiliency. He gives us Elijah. He gives us Elisha. He shows us the prophets. Because we can't identify with an abstract truth, we can, however, identify with people. Forgiveness is another one. He doesn't just say, you ought to forgive. He gives us Joseph, who forgave his brothers for their mistreatment of him. He paints his heroes, warts and all. There are scars. There are dark sides of every life. So we're not shielded from the Jonahs and the Samsons and the King Sauls and the King Davids. We see it in true, living, raw color. Now, when we deal with these things about wisdom, we need to have a for instance. And God gives us that in this next part of chapter 8, to which we've turned. In verses 1 through 9, I see rather obviously the portrait of a boss, someone who is a manager, a CEO, chief executive officer, an executive, an entrepreneur, a foreman, someone who is over the lives of other people by way of authority. How do I know it refers to a boss? Well, one wag could say verse 1 refers to a stern face and verse 2 refers to oaths, and if that doesn't describe your boss, I don't know what does. But I'm just joking. Obviously, there's got to be a pretty good amount of evidence for us to say such a thing. Look at verse 2, the command of the king. He's in authority. Verse 4, the word of the king is authoritative. That's a superior. Verse 5, a royal command. Verse 9, a man who exercised authority over another man. See, it's rather clear when you let it speak for itself. If you are exercising authority over other people, if your word is a command, if you are viewed as the officer of the ship, If you are in charge, this passage is for you. And I wish that every leader, every potential leader, would give God his or her undivided attention for a few minutes. Because you need some counsel, as I do, from God regarding wise and good leadership. And I think we'll find it here. I locate in these verses no less than 5 characteristics of a good leader. You may find more than that or less, but I'm pretty well convinced that there are at least 5 in this passage that are worth our time. Let's take a look at them one by one as we work our way through Ecclesiastes 8, verses 1 through 9. Who is like the wise man, and who knows the interpretation of a matter? I would like to suggest that the first half of the first verse gives us the first characteristic, a clear mind. A clear mind. Study the question. It's rhetorical. It's not meant to be answered verbally. It's meant to be answered mentally, so that you come back to God with the answer. Who is like a wise man? No one. Who knows the interpretation? That's the key of a matter. That's the key word, interpretation. It's a loan word from Aramaic, pasher is. It means solution, or someone who sees through the mystery of something. So it has in mind an individual who knows why things are as they are. Don't let that slip. A good boss is one who knows philosophically where the ship is going and why. He doesn't have to know all of the how-tos of the ship, but he does need to know the whys. Someone stuck his head in my office several years ago and passed on a piece of advice I think I'll never forget regarding leadership. He says, "You know, Chuck, I was reading the other day something that really helped me. I thought it might pass it on to you. It might help you. The person who knows how will usually have a job, but that individual will usually work for the one who knows why." Think about that. That's another way of saying he knows the interpretation of a matter. The person at the top of an organization doesn't have to know all of the details and inner workings of everything within that organization, but he needs to know where that thing is going and why. He needs to be ready to defend that. He needs to be entertaining the question when it's asked him or her, why? Why? A ministry must have in leadership men and women who know why. Why do we meet when we do? What's the purpose of the meeting? Why do we continue doing things? Why do we stop doing things? Why do we believe what we believe? Why? Why? Why is our youth ministry moving in a certain direction? Why are the careers in this particular situation? Why do we minister to the singles as we do? Why do we feel like we do about families? Why do we set aside an important role for the senior adults of our church? Why? 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 It's not just related to ministry. Of course not. This is a king. This is a wise man in any field. You may be in sales. You may be an attorney, a physician. You may be a CPA. Your role may be that of a homemaker, and your leadership is over the most influential people of the future, and that's little children today. Why do you raise them like you raise them? Why have you set that standard? What's the philosophy of your home? That's knowing the interpretation. Kyle and Dalich, an old but rather reliable commentary on the Old Testament, suggests this. It does not mean one who has the knowledge of all things, but who knows how to explain the difficult things, to unfold mysterious things. Some people will look at an organization and it'll be a big mystery. It better not be to the person at the top, or you're in bad trouble. The interpretation of a thing is the basic assignment of the leader. Let me say one more word, because frequently the one at the top is action-oriented and very energetic regarding product. It's extremely important that you not let action outrun thinking. You are really and truly at the top paid to think through, to think about, to think of. I have an an executive friend of mine who sets aside one full day a month to do nothing but think. Think about where they're going. Think about his leadership. Think about the staffing. Think about the planning. Think about the strategy. Think about the history. To think. And by the way, he has led an organization in a phenomenal manner. He's got a clear mind. When there's confusion at the top, there is greater confusion down the line. Or as a friend of mine says, a mist in the pulpit puts a fog in the pew. I think that's a good word. Churches that have pastors who are uncertain of where they are going become churches that don't know where they are going. It's a tragedy to behold. Now, there's a second. I especially like this one, and you know that I would, because when you read the word, you thought Chuck's going to have a great time with this. A man's wisdom illumines him, literally, a man's wisdom illumines his face and causes his stern face to beam. Keep looking at the verse. It's an intriguing statement. Begin with the natural face. It's mentioned in the word stern. That's what comes naturally. The root word, it's translated fierce countenance in Deuteronomy 28, and that may describe your boss to a T. It's translated in Daniel 8, impudent or insolent. A man's wisdom lights his face up and causes his otherwise fierce countenance to be. The second quality of a good leader is a cheerful disposition. There are few things more contagious than a cheerful boss. Unfortunately, a stern boss can also infect an organization. It's the picture of being stiff and tough and determined, unsmiling, flat. I've heard it referred to as having the eyes of a shark. A face that resembles discouragement and a negative mentality.
Well, we're just getting started on today's topic, the qualities of a good boss. You're listening to Insight for Living and Chuck Swindoll. Online, we're at insightworld.org. If you've been listening to Chuck teach for any length of time, you likely have a few favorite messages. Well, we recently identified six of the most highly requested sermons from last year. The collection is called Wisdom for Home and Work, Listener Favorites, Volume 2. Listen to a couple of these titles: Suggestions for Parenting Grown-Up Kids, Shaping the Will with Wisdom, and What to Do When You've Blown It. And the collection includes the sermon you heard today in its entirety, The Qualities of a Good Boss. The collection includes six audio CDs or downloadable MP3 files. Again, it's called Wisdom for Home and Work, Listener Favorites, Volume 2. And it's yours when you give a special fiscal year-end donation. If you're listening in the United States, call 1-800-772-8888 or go to insight.org. I'll give our contact information again in just a moment. But first, Chuck, this time of year represents a reason to celebrate. The year was 1979.
Okay, I'm not one for long spells of nostalgia, but sometimes reflecting on the past is entirely healthy. In fact, it's biblical. Looking back provides ample evidence of God's enduring faithfulness. And that's what this season does for Cynthia and me. On June 30th, Insight for Living closes the books on another financial year. But more important than that, the following day, July the 1st, we celebrate 35 years of God's faithfulness to Insight for Living. He's been with us every step of the way, every week, every month of every year, surprising us beyond measure with twists and turns in the plot that he had planned for us. Every chapter in his book has been filled with evidence of his grace and his abundant provision. And what began as one man's voice, mine, has now multiplied many times over with resources and ministries we never dreamed about back in 1979. You've been part of our story, too. Think about that. You've been listening and many times investing in this ministry, and we're so grateful. And now, as we reach another milestone, can I call on you to express your gratitude to God, maybe for the first time, or maybe once again? All I need is for you to give a generous donation to Insight for Living. If this is a place where you draw spiritual strength, please make this an occasion to express your gratitude by giving, so that others can hear Insight for Living as you do. Thanks so much.
Respond to Chuck Swindoll right now. If you're listening in the United States, call 1-800-772-8888. Or if you prefer, go to insight.org. When you give today, we'll say thank you by providing the 6 audio CDs or downloadable MP3 files called Wisdom for Home and Work, Listener Favorites, Volume 2. It's a natural way to reinforce our partnership together by providing material designed to deepen your walk with God. Listen to these favorites at your own pace, and then introduce a friend or family member to Insight for Living by passing the messages along. Time is running short to take advantage of this special offer. June 30th comes this Monday, and we'd urge you to call or go online while it's still fresh on your mind. When you give, be sure to request the 6 audio CDs or downloadable MP3 files called Wisdom for Home and Work, Listener Favorites, Volume 2. If you're listening in the United States, the number again is 1-800-772-8888. And online, go to insight.org. I'm Dave Spiker. More from Chuck Swindoll on the qualities of a good boss, Monday, right here on Insight for Living.
The preceding message, The Qualities of a Good Boss, was copyrighted in 1983, and the sound recording was copyrighted in 2013 by Charles R. Swindoll, Inc. All rights are reserved worldwide.